Well, thank you, Brother Chairman, and my dear brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ. Proverbs chapter 27. The title for this section, or the key, I think, to this particular chapter, as our chairman has said, is how to manage relationships. So what we're going to do first is I'm going to give you a break-up of the chapter, and then, as usual, given that there is too much material in the chapter to cover, we're going to look at just one section by way of illustration of the spirit of the whole. So chapter 27 then is on the subject of how to manage relationships, because you see it's most important for a king that he knows how to do this. And I believe that the chapter divides as follows. Firstly, verses 1 to 4, attitude to oneself. One's attitude to oneself. You see, that's where it all begins. Depending on what we think, what we feel about ourselves, will tend to govern the other relationships that we have in life. And so there are exhortations there as to the right and proper attitude that we should have concerning our own position in life. Then verses 5 to 17, which God willing we'll look at this morning, is relationships with friends. Relationships with friends, verses 5 to 17. So terribly, terribly important, and so important for kings. Kings also needed friends, true friends, that they could rely on in time of crisis. Verses 18 to 22, it concerns the matter of dealings with servants. Dealings with servants. And finally, verses 23 to 27, care of the household. Care of the household. So you see, here are all the principal relationships that a king would experience in life. His own attitude to himself, his closest advisers and friends that were clustered about him, his dealings with the rest of the servants that came under his authority, and finally the care of the royal household itself, his own family, and I suppose ultimately extending out to the very realm of the kingdom itself, because in a sense, you see, all the subjects are part of the greater household that the king has responsibility for. So these are the relationships that the king must learn to manage if he would be wise. Well, we're going to look then at verses 5 to 17 this morning on the matter of relationships with friends. How wonderful a theme and a subject this is. Now, you'll notice then that verse 5 starts by saying this. It says, open rebuke is better than secret love. Open rebuke is better than secret love. Or as Green says, an alternative translation of the Hebrew, better is reproof revealed than love concealed. Or Moffat's, better a frank word of reproof than the love that will not speak. So why is it better? Why is the rebuke that is revealed better than the secret love here? Well, the answer is because, you see, this secret love of the fifth verse is the love of admiration or adoration, but it only tends to flattery. In fact, flattery is one of the most dangerous things, especially for kings, isn't it? To be subject to flattery. And I think the lesson of the verse, you see, is that genuine friendship is characterized by that love that actually seeks the ultimate good of the other and not merely their admiration. The secret love here is of the person who thinks that the other is wonderful and can only flatter them even when they're wrong. That's not what true friendship's all about. True friendship is when we seek the ultimate good of the other person. And so the lesson of this verse is that in friendships that a rebuke if kindly given will cement the bond of friendship rather than rupture it. Come and have a look at chapter 9 by way of illustration of this principle. Of course, the rebuke needs to be given in the right way, doesn't it? But assuming that it is given in the right way, the lesson is that true friendships in fact are nurtured by those moments of rebuke that friends give to one another. It will actually cement their relationship. Proverbs 9 says, and in the 8th verse, these words, rebuke not a scorner, lest he hate thee, but rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Rebuke a wise man, says the proverb, and he will love thee. Mind you, of course, the rebuke still has to be given in private, doesn't it? When it says in Proverbs 27, by the way, verse 5, open rebuke, that doesn't mean that's not giving license to the idea that we ought to rebuke our friends in public. We still do it privately, don't we? After the Spirit of the Lord's teaching in Matthew 18, it is between thee and him alone. So it's not public criticism. The sense of the openness here is the frank sincerity with which it is given, but not in the public domain. And so I think the lesson of Proverbs 27 and verse 5 is it opens this idea of friendship. And what an interesting and valuable way to start off on the matter of friendship is this. The principle of verse 5 is this, that part of the secret of developing true friendships is that we have a spirit that will accept rebuke. Part of the secret of finding and developing true friendships is that we have a spirit that will accept rebuke. You see, there are those in ecclesial life that no matter what you say, you know that they're going to fly off the handle the moment the slightest breath of criticism is voiced on any subject. It's very, very difficult to be close friends with those, isn't it? Now, if we really want to have true friends, we've got to be open to their rebukes. Mind you, we've got to be careful with rebuke, don't we? Because verse 6 says, and again in the context of friendship, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Now, by the way, the wounds here of verse 6, well, that's really the rebuke of verse 5, isn't it? So these are the rebukes of the friend, the faithful wounds. And they're faithful, you see. These wounds are not to hurt or to maim. They are to correct and to help us. And they're faithfully given. And there's a contrast with the second part of the proverb, because you see where it says the kisses of the enemy are deceitful. The word deceitful here really means to be abundant. It doesn't actually mean to be deceitful. It means to be abundant. In other words, the kisses of the enemy, to quote from the New International Version or others, the kisses of the enemy are profuse. So you see, there's a contrast here. The kisses of the enemy are multiplied, but the wounds of the faithful friends are therefore, by implication, sparing, aren't they? And I think that's a good lesson too, because you see, although there are times in life when true friends need to rebuke one another, they need to be sparingly administered. If you become overly fond of rebuking your friends, you'll find in the end that your friendships will be blighted for some strange reason. So we learn to administer such things sparingly, don't we, and in the faithful spirit of love. Actually, the verse really is a paradox, don't you think? Verse 6, you see, what happens is the wound comes from the friend and the kiss comes from the enemy. How strange. But it's all part of the principles of true friendship, you see. And so I think the lesson of the verse is this, that true friendship is not seen in the smothering protests of love or the frequent assertions of feeling that we have for one another, but more in those occasional acts of correction that seek true mutual improvement. True friendship is deeper than merely the outward tokens of affection. And part of the value of true friendships is that we're able to help each other in our development in the truth in this way. Now you see what verse 7 says. Verse 7 says, the full soul loatheth an honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. The full soul loatheth an honeycomb. Now, do you know, the honeycomb here is taken really as a symbol of the sweetness of friendship. In fact, it comes from, the word honeycomb here comes from the same word translated sweetness in verse 9, which is going to be related to the subject again of friendship. So, I think the lesson of verse 7 is this, that there's a warning here against the danger, funnily enough, of too much friendship. Now come back to chapter 25 and look at verses 16 and 17, because this is really the same principle. Actually, we never had time to look at these verses, so let's have a look at them now. 25, 16 and 17. Hast thou found honey? Eat so much as is sufficient for thee, lest thou be filled therewith and vomit it. Withdraw thy foot from thy neighbour's house, lest he be weary of thee and so hate thee. Now, you see the word weary in verse 17? Well, that's actually the same word as the word filled in verse 16. So you see, what verse 16 says is this: have you found honey? Eat just enough. Don't eat ever more than enough. Do you know why? Because you see, what lies beyond enough? And we imagine that what lies beyond enough is ecstasy. But the proverb says, no, it's not. What lies beyond enough is nausea. So don't eat so much to the point where you're filled, because if you're filled with it, you'll actually find unpleasant things emerge. Now says verse 17, and here's the taking up, you see, of the proverb. Well, here's the honey, you see, verse 17, withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house. The honey here is the friendship that they enjoy. He says, well, be very careful. Because, you see, if you're in your neighbor's house too much, too often, too frequently, he might just become filled with you. And so hate thee. And the friendship will become nauseous. In other words, it's really saying your company may be very sweet, but you can have too much of a good thing, you know. So there's a danger here, actually, against friendship that is taken to excess, friendship that becomes smothering, friendship that becomes unwanted interference. Now, coming back to Proverbs 26 and verse 7, I think that's what it's saying. You see, the full soul loatheth an honeycomb. The lesson of this verse is that too much leads to loathing. Friendship can be strained by repeated or excessive contact. Even friends, even good friends, need privacy. They need space. They need room. We don't overdo it, you see. Mind you, the verse goes on to say, but to the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. And so I think there's a warning here that, you see, loneliness is a hunger for company, isn't it? And those that are lonely have such a hunger for company that may lead them, says the proverb, into unwise friendships that are not helpful at all. They grasp at any friend that might come their way and imagine that it's sweet, but really it was bitter. And the proverb cautions against the danger of rushing into friendships that may in fact not be helpful at all to our development in the truth, simply because we're lonely. We've still got to be careful, you see. Friendships are special things and terribly important to whether we will develop in a spiritual way or not in a spiritual way. It all depends on the friends we have. And some friends will not be suitable. They will not be sweet. They will not be honey. They will in fact prove to be bitter companions. So where do we find those good and right and wholesome friendships that we all yearn to have? Well, the answer is, says verse 8, in a certain place. You see, verse 8 says, as a bird that wandereth from her nest, so is a man that wandereth from her place. And so just as verse 7 has cautioned against the dangers of too much friendship, too much contact, so verse 8 here now warns against the dangers of too little contact with our friends. Now you see, what's the nest here? Well, the nest is an interesting thing. Let me quote to you a certain passage from the prophecy of Isaiah. I'll just read you these words. This is a lovely expression about the nest. And my hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathereth eggs that are left, have I gathered all the earth, and there was none that moved the wing, or opened the mouth, or peeped. You see, the nest is the place in Scripture where the little ones are reared, isn't it? It's the place where the young ones are, it's the place where the eggs are hatched and the little ones are reared. That's Isaiah chapter 10 and verse 14. You'll find a reference to that. Remember Psalm 84 verse 3, the swallow hath found a place, a nest for her young, a nest where she may lay her young, even thine altars, O Lord. The nest was the place where the little ones are brought up and nourished. Now what the bird's done in verse 8 here is this bird, which by the way is a mother bird, you see she wanders from her nest, not his nest. What she's done is she has deserted her charge and endangered her offspring. She's wandered off from the nest. And I think the lesson of the verse is this. You see, the nest is the ecclesia, isn't it? And the lesson of the verse is that it is in the ecclesial nest that godly friendships are reared. Not only is it the place where our children should be brought up, but it's the place where we find repose with other members of the family. If we keep the metaphor of the bird, the lesson of verse 8 is that the ecclesial nest is where others of the same brood are to be found. Now what verse 8 says is if you're always wandering from the nest, you'll never develop lasting and true friendships. Those friendships are to be found and nurtured in the ecclesial nest and not outside. So don't ever imagine that friendship in the world is the answer to our problems. It's not. You'll only find these friendships in the ecclesia. They're the true friendships. They're the only friendships that can lead us to proper spiritual growth. And how wonderful they are. And you see how wonderful they are because of what verse 9 says. Because verse 9 says, ointment and perfume rejoice the heart, and so doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. The Hebrew of this verse is a little difficult, but I think that the authorized version is basically correct. It suggests a parallel here, doesn't it? That, well, the Jerusalem Bible says, fragrant oil gladdens the heart, friendship's sweetness comforts the soul. So there's a parallel, you see, of ideas here, isn't there? And you see, verse 9 is really a lovely counterbalance to verse 6, isn't it? Because, you see, in verse 6 we have those wounds from the friend that bite and that sting. But in verse 9 we have the sweetness of counsel as a balm that soothes and that heals. And you see, both of these things are necessary in the development of friendships. There may be times for rebuke, says verse 6, but there's also a time for sympathetic care of one another, says verse 9. And we all need the counsel of the soul and the wonderful benefits that friendships bring. Remember these words? Again, I'll just quote them to you. We, it was thou, a man mine equal, my guide, mine acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked unto the house of God in company. That's the lament of David concerning his friendship with Ahithophel in Psalm 55. Verses 13 and 14. We took sweet counsel together. You see, that's what true friendship is all about, isn't it? Taking counsel, the one with the other. And we all need those opportunities in life. You know what friendship's really all about, brothers and sisters? The true value of friendship here. Friendship is all about the joy of being able to speak to another person from our hearts, to uncover our souls, and to do so with absolute confidence that what we say will be kept private and will be understood. Think of these passages. You know, in the 2nd of Chronicles 20 and verse 7, it says that Abraham was called the friend of God. You know why he was called the friend of God? I think he was called the friend of God because of a verse in Genesis 18, verse 17, where God says, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I shall do? I think that's where the notion came from, that he was the friend of God. You see, because you know what friends are? Friends are those who take counsel with each other, you see. And God says, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I shall do? And the answer, of course, is no, because he's my friend. And one takes counsel with friends. Remember these words in Exodus 33 verse 11 that says that God spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaketh unto his friend, says Exodus 33 verse 11. And John 15 verse 15 says, the Lord says to his disciples, I call you not servants, but I call you friends. For whatsoever things I have heard, these have I made known unto you. Friends are those who talk to one another and give counsel to each other, in the knowledge that those counsels will be respected and kept private between the friends. Now, which of us doesn't need the sweetness of that counsel in ecclesial life from our dearest friends? Yet one of the things I like concerning that ninth verse of Proverbs is, you see, although ointment and perfume rejoice the heart, and they're similar to the sweetness of counsel from friends, the sweetness of a friend's counsel is infinitely superior to ointment and perfume, isn't it? You know why? Because you see, ointment and perfume, brothers and sisters, can only beautify the outward man. But the sweetness of friendship enriches the inner man. That's far more valuable, isn't it? How we need the sweetness of our friends' counsel. Verse 10 goes on to say in Proverbs 27, thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity, for better is a neighbour that is near than a brother far off. Now, by the way, I don't think this is suggesting that the brother is evil or anything like that. What's the principle of the verse here? Well, I think the principle is this, that we've got to learn to value friendships that have been long established over time. And I've seen this happen, by the way, in ecclesial life, where a friendship has sprung up between two households in the truth because of like-mindedness, and that friendship has gone into the next generation. The children become friends because they also are like-minded in the things of the truth. These are long-established friendships that should be revered and valued. It's not saying that the brother is evil. What it is saying is that certain friendships are based upon principles that are higher and stronger than flesh and blood relationships. Isn't that what it's saying? That certain friendships are based on higher principles than merely flesh and blood relationships. Come and have a look at chapter 18. Here's the spirit, isn't it? Chapter 18, verse 24. Oh yes, these are the friendships that we ought to treasure. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. Here's the spirit of that, you see. Proverbs 18, verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. And here it is. And there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. See, these are the friendships of the Spirit, aren't they? This is the friend that sticks even closer than a brother. This is the friend and the father's friend that one ought not to forsake in Proverbs 27, verse 10. They are precious indeed. You know, brothers and sisters, I've always thought that this verse in Proverbs 27, verse 10, is a wonderful comfort to those who have come into the truth from outside, who have no mother and father in the truth, no grandparents, no aunts and uncles. And those that have come into the truth from outside have suffered loss, haven't they, of family relationships. And you see, what the proverb is saying is that there are friendships that are based on a higher and stronger and nobler principle than flesh and blood. And these friends stick closer than brothers. Don't ever forsake them. Treasure them. Anyone in the truth can find them, can have them, can treasure these special friendships that are unique within the brotherhood of God. And then verse 11 says, in Proverbs 27, my son, be wise, and make my heart glad that I may answer him that reproacheth me. Now, it doesn't say, when it says my son here, it's not, we're not sure, of course, who's speaking. It could be one of two things. It could be an echo from the father of the previous verse, thy father's friend. And then almost as if from the past, out comes the father's voice, you see, my son. Or it could be that this is the term used which was often used in biblical times, of the master or the teacher to his pupil, my son. You understand what I'm saying there? That a teacher would call his pupil my son. I don't think it matters, actually. Either would be the same. You know, in Matthew chapter 10, verse 25, which we won't turn up, it says that the disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his lord. Sufficient that the disciple become as his master. And I think that's the lesson of this verse, you see, that what this verse is saying is that either the father of a son or the teacher of a pupil, the lesson is the same for both of them, that their value is measured by how successfully they have imbued their sons or their pupils with their own principles. So what's the proof that a teacher has been wise or that a father has been prudent in the education of offspring? And the proof is, verse 11, that the son has formed wise friendships. There's the best proof that he's received wise instruction and the complete answer to any possible criticism or approach that may be levelled against the father or the teacher. And so whoever it is, I don't think it matters, the teacher or the father here says, my son, the best way of proving that these counsels that I give on friendship are right is for you to practice it. If you show true friendships in your life, then it's the answer to whoever may reproach me, says the teacher. So he appeals to us all, that we might learn these principles of friendship. Now, when verse 12 says, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, we've got one of these proverbs that's already been used before. We don't need to turn it up, but you'll find that it's in Proverbs 22 and verse 3. So we've already had this proverb, you see, it comes from the earlier collection of Solomon's writings. So remember we asked ourselves the question before, well, why would he use a proverb that's already been used before? And the answer, of course, is now it's being brought together, or brought into this particular chapter, in a different context. The principle is the same, but the teaching is different. Now what's the lesson of this verse? A prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Well, firstly, let's take the basic meaning. You see, there's a difference between faith that things will work out and a blind optimism that everything will be just fine. You know, everyone sees evil when it's arrived, don't they? I think that's right. Everybody sees evil once it's arrived. But you see, what this verse says is that the prudent person foresees evil. That's the key, isn't it? The prudent person sees before it's even come. And they do something about it. They turn aside. The foolish blunder on smack into the problem. You can't stop them. You can't warn them. They won't be taught. They walk straight into the problem and it hurts. The simple pass on and are punished. Now you see, the reason why I think this proverb is being used again is because Hezekiah is now bringing it into the context of friendship. The principle is now being applied in the context of friends and of friendships. And it's true, you see, that a prudent person sees an unnecessary conflict looming between friends.